CEO Business Mind, the radio show for entrepreneurs, small business owners, and professionals. Whether you own or run a business or would like to start one, this is the place for all the answers. Now, here's your host, Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito with CEO Business Mind. Welcome to my show. If you want to get to me, it's really easy. Just Google National Freedom Forum. That's my political one. Just Google CEOBusinessMind.com. Look for the box that says subscribe. Type in your email information. Follow the confirmation instructions. And if you do that, you'll be able to see my blog postings that are instructional going back many years. You can see some of the businesses that we're in. And you can even see some of the job openings we might have in the United States and once in a while even outside. Back to my political blog. If you want to see about my rantings, and I do rant at times, just go to NationalFreedomForum.com. Same process. Look for the box that says subscribe. Type in your email information. Follow the confirmation instructions. And if you do that, you can take a look at my political rantings on a daily basis. And if you want to know more about Paragon Home Resources, I do write a blog every day. Just go to ParagonHomeResources.com. Look for the little line that says blog. Same process. Go in, put in your email information, follow the instructions, and you'll get my Paragon Home Resources blog postings every day. You can check out our podcast on TalkZone.com, and all of my shows are, I guess, posted there, so you can go back, and if you missed a show, you can certainly catch up. And so we always start the show with my Seeing the Train Coming segment, and this is a really bad one. There are cities, I would call them Democrat socialist cities and states, considering eliminating qualified immunity for cops. This is a really, really bad idea. So let me explain what that means. Okay, all government employees and all elected officials have qualified immunity. That means if they do something stupid, they can't personally be sued. Okay, they can't personally be sued. The city can be sued, the county can be sued, the state can be sued, maybe the federal government can be sued, although that's very tough, but the individual employee cannot be sued. Now, the notion of eliminating qualified immunity from a cop, the average cop in the United States makes $70,000 a year. Now, keep in mind, folks, this is a business show, but if we don't have law and order on our city streets, businesses can't do business. Businesses that aren't safe can't open their doors. People who aren't safe, you know, can't live life, okay? So if you eliminate qualified immunity, what you're doing is you're allowing cops to be sued. Now think about this. Every time a cop has an interaction with a criminal or anybody else that that person does not like, I guarantee you there will be an ambulance chaser lawyer 2 seconds later that will file litigation against that cop. And what will end up happening in these cities where they eliminate qualified immunity for cops, and they're apparently thinking about doing it in New York City, which would be insane, another reason not to visit New York, cops are going to quit. Because at the end of the day, for a guy who makes $70,000 a year on average, now New York, they probably make a little bit more because cost of living is so high there, but for a guy that on average makes $70,000 a year, how is that person going to deal with what could be hundreds of lawsuits a year that no doubt will be filed against that individual? And, you know, they could lose their house. They would probably have to file bankruptcy. Nobody is going to be a cop in a city that eliminates qualified immunity for cops. And so what's going to happen is, those cops that want to stay in law enforcement, they're going to leave those cities and states. They're going to go to work in cities and states that retain qualified immunity because it's only common sense. And all of a sudden, you're going to have a city like New York, or if Chicago was dumb enough to do it with their high murder rates, or San Francisco, or Los Angeles. I mean, these are the likely places where the left-wing liberals, you know, control these cities. That if they're going to do it, it's going to be in the cities that need law enforcement the most, okay? So what's going to happen is these cops are going to leave, and then what these cities are going to find is they have no police force. So when you call 911 in New York City, you're going to get a recording that says, sorry, Charlie, there's nobody we can send out. We don't have any cops. You're on your own, kid. You better buy a gun. You better buy a lot of guns. You better hire private security because nobody's coming when you dial 911. Now, you know, these left-wing politicians, I'm sorry, but this is just crazy. This is crazy time. What would end up happening potentially is that cops, now remember what this has done to medicine, by the way, cops would have to have malpractice insurance. Well, that would cost thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars a year. Most likely the unions in those cities maybe would buy malpractice insurance to protect their members. Well, that's going to cost millions of dollars a year in a big city. And so one way or another, you know, the dues for the cops are going to go up dramatically if they do it that way. The cop's not going to be able to buy it individually. They don't make enough money to buy malpractice insurance. What I'm saying here, folks, if you live in any of these states or cities, or you do business in any of these states or cities that are considering this harebrained scheme, you need to get on your phone to the governor of that state and to the mayors of those cities, and you need to say, we're not coming there, folks. We're not going to come if you don't have a police force to protect us, to protect our businesses, to protect us that when we my wife and I used to go to New York every 2 or 3 years because we love Broadway. Well, you can forget about that. I'll buy the CDs. I'm not going to New York. It would be insane. And so this notion of eliminating qualified immunity for cops is crazy. It's crazy. You know, this George Floyd case that's going on in Minneapolis, however the case turns in reference to the cop that's being accused of third degree, second degree murder and manslaughter, I don't think they're going to convict him of second or third degree murder because that involves intent. And I'm sure he didn't intend to kill this guy. And George Floyd, by the way, was overdosed on drugs, the autopsy claims. And so it's going to be really interesting to see where this case goes. But in any case, the city of Minneapolis has paid the Floyd family $27 million. Now, imagine if the cop was sued in this case. He probably earned $70,000 or $80,000 a year in Minneapolis. How on earth would that cop pay $27 million? Whether it's legitimate or not, it doesn't matter. How would that cop pay $27 million? It's impossible. So, you know, we really need to look. When you see lunacy, you have to call it what it is. This is crazy time. You cannot remove qualified immunity from cops because they will quit. They will go to other cities. They will go to other states that do not take away qualified immunity because they will not be able to do their jobs without qualified immunity. We've reached insanity. And I think it's important if you live in a state or a city, if you live in the city or you visit that particular city, you need to get on the phone. And if you own a business in those cities, especially, you need to get on top of your mayor or get on top of your governor. And you've got to say, sorry, Charlie, you're not doing this. You're not going to eliminate qualified immunity from cops because you are creating a crime scene that you're going to have crime go through the roof. You're not going to have a police force in these places where they eliminate qualified immunity. This idea of many is about as dumb as any of I've heard come out of the Democrat Party or the Socialist Party. Call them whatever you want. This is about as dumb as it gets. This is stupid. We've reached stupid. This is, as Forrest Gump used to say, stupid is as stupid does. And believe me, this idea is about as dumb as it possibly could be. We have got to retain qualified immunity for cops. The funny part is, it's good enough for government employees. It's good enough for elected politicians. And we know they do some pretty stupid things. They don't want to be sued. They don't want their house on the line, so to speak. Or you know, their personal savings or whatever it would be. So they're retaining qualified immunity for themselves, but they want to take it away for cops. So what's next? They're going to take it away for firemen? Are they next? This is insanity. We've reached insanity, folks. And so I'm encouraging you to get on the phone to your senators, get on the phone to your congresspeople, get on the phone to anybody you can call. We got to keep qualified immunity for cops. We'll be back with more after this quick break.
Thank you.
Now, back to CEO Business Mind, the radio show for entrepreneurs, small business owners, and professionals with Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito with CEO Business Mind, and this is the second segment of our show. And I want to talk about getting a mortgage and the appraisal process and some of the things that we're seeing in the mortgage industry right now. Of course, the housing market is booming. Prices are going through the roof. On average, homes have increased in value by 11% in the last 12 months. In some markets, even more than that. And so here's the problem. When you go to sell your house, and now your buyer agrees to whatever price you've agreed to, and then he's going to get a loan, presumably, and he's going to put 20% down or whatever. And the mortgage company, gets a loan appraisal. And so now the appraiser comes back because the appraiser is working off of history, not necessarily what the market is doing today, this moment, right? So now he looks at basically what are called comparables, and he's looking at sales that maybe happened in the last 3 months, the last 6 months, the last year. Well, I will tell you, in the last 3 months, the housing market has just gone through the roof. There are some markets like mine in Reno, Nevada, where there is no inventory at all. I was in Dallas recently looking at homes, and they stay on the market a week or two at the most. All the new homes are completely sold out. They're doing lotteries, for the next phases that are coming up. They're not doing waiting lists at all because the homes are sold. So now all of a sudden, your buyer is looking to get a mortgage to buy your home. He has 20% to put down, which is normal. 10, 15, 20% is pretty normal. Some people put more. But now what's going to happen is, in some cases, the loan, the appraised value is not going to come out. So let's say you agreed to $350,000, the purchase price, and the home only appraises for $325,000 or $300,000 because they're going off historical data. They're not looking forward. They're looking backwards to compare values, right? So now the buyer comes back to you and says, oh, well, I'm not going to pay you $350,000. The appraiser says your home is only worth $325,000. So first you have to get by that hurdle. And that's an easy one. Well, sorry, Charlie, the market's hot right now. And if you don't want it at 350, move on. I'll wait for the next buyer in a week and the next buyer will buy it at 350. But here's the problem. So you don't agree to lower your price. And I certainly wouldn't in this market. So what's going to happen is the buyer is going to have to come up with more money to put down because depending on his or her ability to qualify for the mortgage, the question is, you know, can they buy that home with 20% down and still qualify for the mortgage based upon their income? So what will happen is the guy's going to have to come up with more money. I know I had this happen, and this is where it can impact you if you're refinancing. I was refinancing my home. And the appraiser, we have a two-story house, but the second story is downstairs, which is very customary in the area that I live in because you can't build up. You can only build down because of the views and everything. So the appraiser, in his stupid wisdom, the bank appraiser, comes back and doesn't value my downstairs at the same square footage price as they value my upstairs, okay? Even though... No, actually, it was the bank that did it. It wasn't. I won't even tell you who it is because I'd never use them again. They were horrible. But it was a major bank, I might add. But anyway, they wouldn't take the appraiser's value. That's what it was. They pushed back on the valuation because they literally looked at my downstairs as though it was a basement. It's not a basement. It is the second story of the home with 10-foot ceilings, with, you know, French windows and the French door and the whole deal. It's no different than if it was the second story above ground, above my house, only here the second stories are downstairs. Every single house on our street has the second story downstairs. The appraiser came back to the mortgage company and said, no, this is normal here. This is normal and customary. The footage should be valued as the same amount per square foot as the upstairs. The mortgage company wanted to value the downstairs as though it was a basement. Now, think if you live in the East, you know, they have traditional basements. In the West, we don't have basements the way they do in the East typically. So anyway, they came back 3 days before I was supposed to close on the loan. And they said to me, if you want this loan, you're going to have to come up with another $100,000 because based upon the valuation that we are accepting, this was the mortgage company now, you know, you don't meet the ratios anymore. You'll have to come up with another $100,000. Well, fortunately, I was in a position to make that happen. I barely got it done. I think the reality is that the mortgage company, and it was a major bank, did not want to fund the mortgage because interest rates had gone up. So they created a hurdle. But the issue was, you know, the way the appraisal of the home came in. And if you're going to refinance your home, you may find a similar situation where you're trying to refinance. They're going to get a loan appraisal, a bank appraisal. You know, you may not meet the ratios anymore if, in fact, the appraiser or the appraisal comes in lower than you think your home is worth. And you may very well be right that your home is worth more. And so this is becoming a real problem. Now, if you have an all cash buyer, no problem. It doesn't matter. If they agree to your price and they're happy and you're happy, I mean, there are homes now, people are buying even without home inspections, which, by the way, I wouldn't recommend. But the market is so hot in many areas that sellers, buyers are sometimes waiving home inspections. Not a good idea, folks, but they're doing it, right? Because they want the home. And or what's happening is they get a home inspection and they find some things wrong with the house. And the seller says, well, sorry, I'm not repairing it. You'll have to buy the house as is if you want it. Because if you don't, there's three buyers behind you that want to buy my home. That's what happens when you're in a seller's market, which we are right now. But the whole issue of the mortgage is an issue. And I wrote a blog post on Paragon Home Resources on whether it makes sense to pay off a mortgage. Normally, I always used to say that when you get to retirement, you should have a home paid off. However, it is conceivable today to get an interest-only loan at 3%, and your payment is going to be half what your payment would be if it was a fully amortized loan. So maybe you're now 65 years old, or let's say 63 years old, and you decide you're probably going to stay in that home for at least 5 to 10 more years. So you can refinance. You have to do it preferably while you still have a job. You can refinance, and you can get a 10-year interest-only loan. It will cut your mortgage payment in half. Now, it's not going to pay off any principal. So whatever you borrow, you're going to owe 10 years from now. But the presumption is the home hopefully will appreciate and you'll sell it 10 years from now to downsize, or maybe you're going to move to Florida or Arizona or some warm place. And at that point, the mortgage gets paid off. You've paid half monthly what you would have paid if you had a fully amortized loan. Now, keep in mind, if you have a 30-year loan, you don't really actually start paying off principal for the most part until the last 10 years of that loan. So for 20 years of that loan, you're not seeing the principal go down much because almost the entire payment is going to pay interest. So you really have to meet with your accountant, see what makes sense for you, consider what your long-term plans are, you know, relative to how long you want to stay in that home. You can get a 5-year interest-only loan. You could get a 7-year interest-only loan. You could get a 10-year interest-only loan. And so while I used to say you really should have a home paid off when you retire, I've changed my thinking a little bit. It really depends on what your circumstances are. And, you know, maybe you want to look at your income in terms of having a lower payment. And because now you can travel, you're fairly healthy, and 10 years from now, you may not be able to do any of those things. By the way, not everybody lives to be 90, folks. The average man in the United States lives to be 76, and the average woman, 81. So, you know, you really have to think, and I've said to people, take the age that your mother died at, take the age that your father died at, average those two, and there's a pretty good chance that maybe you're going to live to the average of those two, especially if you're a man. If you're a woman, you might live closer to the number of years your mother lives because men usually die first, but not always, not always. And so what I'm discovering in the last year or two, I think we've had 6 or 7 of our friends die in their 70s and unexpectedly from various cancers and things. And to be honest, it's sobering. So I'm starting to look at things a little bit differently, you know, based upon the things that I'm seeing. And so as it relates to a mortgage, you know, with interest rates so low, Maybe it makes sense not to pay off your house. Maybe it makes sense to do an interest-only loan if you plan to stay in it for 5, 7, or 10 years and sell it then. It's going to appreciate probably. Now, we'll go ups and downs. There are no guarantees. But generally, homes appreciate. And, you know, if you can live through a 10-year cycle, which is important, because usually 10 years makes the difference. I've seen huge swings in real estate values over a 10-year period. Right now, we're at a very, very high, you know, real estate market with home values going through the roof. You know, I got brokers knocking on my home every day trying to get me to sell because values are so healthy right now, and they're trying to entice me, you know, relative to what I could get for my home. I don't know that I'm interested in selling today, but I listen. I always listen, you know. But I think in terms of getting a mortgage, you may run into this appraisal process problem, and you'll just have to see where it goes. But I think you really need to have your real estate agent qualify your buyers so that ultimately they know, we know, you know, that that buyer can come up with an extra 10% if needed because the appraiser comes back with a price where the home does not appraise at what you've agreed to. So I would be asking that question. Does the buyer have more cash in the event the home does not appraise because I'm not lowering my price? This is my, I would go right into it up front. This is my firm price. I am not dropping the price no matter what the home appraises for. So unless the buyer can come up with more cash and to qualify for the mortgage, then, you know, let's not even go down this road because I'm not going to play the game. And believe me, it's a game. So I think it's important that everybody understand what the rules are because you could find yourself in this situation. And, you know, you don't want to waste a lot of time with a buyer that if they had to come up with an extra 10%, they couldn't. They're so stretched that the maximum they can put down is the 20%. Time for a break. We'll have more CEO Business Mind in a moment.
Whether you're thinking of starting a business or just moving up the corporate ladder, this is the place for practical advice. CEO Business Mind with Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito with CEO Business Mind for the second half of my show. Again, if you want to get to me, just go to CEOBusinessMind.com. Look for the box that says subscribe, type in your email information, follow the confirmation instructions, and if you do that, you can see my blog postings that are very instructional going back many years. You can see some of the businesses that we're in, and you can even check out if we have job openings somewhere in the United States. If you're interested in my political rant and raves, you can go to nationalfreedomforum.com. Same process, look for the box that says subscribe, type in your email information, follow the confirmation instructions, and if you do that, you'll get my political blog postings every day. If you want to know more about Paragon Home Resources and get some really good information every day, just Google ParagonHomeResources.com. Look for the little line that says blog. Click on it. Fill out your name, again, the box, email information, follow the confirmation instructions, and you'll get information that I send every day that I think can be helpful in terms of home ownership and all sorts of home-related issues that could be helpful to you. If you want to check out prior shows, just go to TalkZone.com, and you'll see my shows are hung there. They're podcasts there. If you missed a week, you can go back, you can click on it, and you can listen to prior shows that you might be interested in. So for the third segment of our show today, I want to talk about COVID passports, a very bad idea and threat to our freedoms. Folks, we got some real issues here because we're getting to George Orwell's 1984. You've got companies like IBM, Salesforce, and others bidding on a contract with the government to create some sort of automated COVID passport. So that in order for you to go in a grocery store, in order for you to go into a restaurant, in order for you certainly to get on an airplane, in order for you to go into a bank, you would have to scan your iPhone. You know, sometimes if you fly on an airline, you can get the boarding pass on your iPhone. They want to create, in essence, a COVID passport where you would scan your iPhone to prove that you've had the COVID vaccine. Now, there's two issues here. One is mandating the vaccine. Now, I've had the vaccine. I had the Moderna vaccine. I had no reaction to the first shot. I had minimal reactions, some fever, and a little bit of body ache. It didn't last long to the second shot. But both my wife and I had the exact same shot. We had the exact same reactions. Wasn't horrible, but I got the shot. But I would never mandate, for example, in fact, I sent out an email to my employees, and I said basically that unless state or federal governments mandate that you have the COVID vaccine in order to work for us, we will never mandate that somebody get this vaccine. That is a personal decision, folks. It's a personal decision. I think it's completely ridiculous. Yesterday, I went to a school board meeting here in Reno, Nevada, and I had to laugh. So, of course, we've had our vaccine, and now the CDC has come out and said that if you've had the vaccine, you cannot transmit the virus. Okay, wonderful. So I'm wearing my mask. They insist on, you know, you had to wear masks. There was overflow crowd because we're dealing with some controversial issues in Reno, Nevada, where I live. And there were six school district police officers enforcing the mask rule. And there were some people have had it with these masks, you know. There were some people, and these are usually retired older people, there were some people that were just refusing to wear masks. Well, they forced them to leave. All right. So anyway, I called one of the police officers over, and fortunately, if they had been a Washoe County or a city police cop, I would have said, don't you think there's some place in this city where somebody is being robbed, raped, or even murdered that you need to be on the beat protecting people? Well, the good news was at least there were police, they were school district cops. They weren't, you know, local county or city cops. But I did tell the woman when I saw she was a school district cop, I said, I can bet you that somewhere in this city, there is a group of kids breaking into a school. Happens every single weekend, everywhere. And I said, here you are enforcing the mask rule. When in fact, these very people, and I carry with me, when you do get the COVID shot, they give you a kind of a form that shows that you've had both shots. So I carry it in my wallet. I could produce it anytime if I had to. But I guess the question is, are we going to have to wear masks for the rest of our lives? You know, this Dr. Fauci, who I think Trump should have fired a long time ago when he was president, I think the guy's an idiot. He keeps going back and forth. You hear different things. It drives me crazy that a month after the election, the CDC comes down and says, no problem with kids going back to school. And we're not even concerned that the staff is vaccinated or not because kids are not transmitters. So in the meantime, children and their families have struggled for more than a year with schools being closed. The teachers don't want to go back. They're getting paid. They're getting paid whether they work or not. So this whole notion of a COVID passport, we really have to stand up and we have to say no. We have to say no. I don't want to do this to my employees. I don't want to have to do it. It's just ridiculous. And so really the question, like for the airlines, here's an interesting little problem. So my one son and daughter-in-law, they have a two-year-old child, and they cannot travel on an airplane unless their two-year-old wears a mask. Well, first of all, try to keep a mask on a two-year-old. It isn't going to happen. It is not going to happen. And if the kid doesn't wear the mask, they'll throw him off the airplane. So it's one thing to say, okay, kids under five do not need to wear masks. Kids over five or six must wear masks. But the notion that you're going to keep a mask on a two-year-old child for a 3 or 4 hour flight, it's hard enough to keep them, you know, just sitting there for 2 or 3 or 4 hours, let alone the notion that they're going to wear a mask. So we really have to stand up. As a business, we have to say no. Unfortunately, big tech, the deep state, wants this to happen. Now, keep in mind, folks, already by virtue of your iPhone, they know who you are. They know where you are at all times. At all times. They're selling your data. They're making money off your data. This is how Google and Apple and Facebook and Twitter and all of these, you know, big tech organizations, this is how they make money. They take your data and they monetize it. Well, think of the potential if everybody in the world had to have a COVID vaccine, a passport. This is like, you know, when I think about Big Brother, you know, in communist countries, to travel, you have to show your papers. You can't just buy a ticket and get on an airplane. You literally, in communist China, they monitor every single person and everything they do and everything they buy. And if they don't like what you're doing, you're going to jail in China, because that's what communist dictatorships do. And so we're getting to a point where this has nothing to do with COVID anymore. This is incredible big government control of everything we do and everything we buy and who we are, what we think. And I got to tell you, it's very upsetting to me. And President Biden, I think the Biden administration is pushing the notion of a COVID passport. And the logic is somehow that if a private company does it, it's not the government. Really, big tech and government are one and the same. They're one and the same, folks. They have so much business between big tech and government. They're one and the same. It doesn't matter whether big tech does it or whether government does it. It's all the same. Government will be able to access that information easily if they choose to. And believe me, they will choose to. Under the guise of national security, they will want to know where every single person is at every single minute of every single day, because especially after the attack on the Capitol, the deep state is paranoid about insurrection, especially with guns and all this other stuff that the Biden administration is talking about. So this is one of those things where big tech is looking to make billions and billions and billions of dollars. No doubt we would have to pay for this COVID passport. You think it's going to be free? Of course not. So IBM wants the contract. Salesforce wants the contract. Oracle wants the contract, because it's worth billions and billions and billions of dollars to them. And we have got to stand up and say, enough. We're not doing this crap. We're just not doing it. Again, this is a business show, but I see the implications. Unfortunately, what happens in Washington does not stay in Washington. I mean, I could have a situation where I wouldn't be able to hire an employee who doesn't have a COVID passport. I don't want that, folks. We'll take a quick time out and be back for more CEO Business Mind.
Harnessing the entrepreneurial spirit of America. This is CEO Business Mind with Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito for the fourth and final segment of our show today. And I want to talk for a few minutes about the cruise line industry. And, I guess I'm going to bet it's going to come back. You know, years and years ago, I used to say to my wife, we've traveled all over the world, you know, and I'd never done a cruise. I don't think we did a cruise until maybe I was 60 or something. I don't know. But anyway, I'd never done a cruise. And I would say to my wife, you know, cruises are for people who are 80 years old. You know, we'll do them eventually, but right now we're in pretty good shape. We can walk. We can do this. We can do that. I don't have any problem renting cars, even driving in Italy, which is, you know, a challenge to say the least. And so let's hold off on the cruise deals, right? And then years ago, I said, you know, okay, fine. So let's do a cruise. So we went with another couple, and we did a princess cruise. Since then, we've done a little bit more upscale cruises, but we did Princess, and we went from Barcelona, Spain to Venice, Italy. I think it was 12-night cruise. And I have to tell you, it was wonderful. We loved it. We loved it. Okay. And since then, we've done many cruises. You know, we've done the Baltics, we've done, the Dalmatian coast and Croatia and all that. We've done Australia, New Zealand. Oh my God, I have to think about them. We've done a bunch, okay? And I love cruises. I absolutely love cruises. And I love the fact that, you know, you don't have to unpack and pack. I love the ease of it. The food generally is very good, and you can get just tons of it if you really want to. You know, I like many of the excursions. I like the ease of it. It's just so easy to do a cruise. And so, you know, the fact that the cruise industry, because of COVID, now keep in mind, the cruise industry was already dealing with the norovirus. And I know that several of the times that we took cruises, there was some outbreak of norovirus. And when that happens, there was one cruise we did, I forget which one, where they had an outbreak of norovirus on the ship. And the folks that got sick, they were confined to their cabins for the entire cruise. They could not come out. All meals were brought to them. Once they came down with the norovirus, you know, but what we did see too was an evolution on cruises where, and this is even before COVID, where it used to be, you know, they have these incredible buffets where you could serve yourself and all this sort of thing. They stopped all of that a long time ago, even before COVID, where they serve you now. You can't just reach in and, you know, grab a spoon and pick up something. You point to it and they put it on your plate now. So, and especially with COVID, that probably got even more intense, you know, when they were still doing cruises. So here we have the cruise line industry, and it's a multi-billion, I can't even imagine how much money is involved in the cruise line industry, because especially with these mega ships now that hold 5,000 or more people, some of them are just humongous. You know, you talk about Titanic, the ships now are probably two or three times bigger than Titanic was. And Titanic, when it was built, you know, I guess was the biggest passenger ship ever built. And of course, now the really big ones that hold 5,000 people, they're humongous. They're cities. They're really malls on water because, of course, the shopping on these ships just never stops. Once they're out to sea, you know, they open up all the stores. And of course, the shopping just never ends when they're out to sea. But in any case, I think the cruise industry will come back. Remember, folks, we have, 10,000 people a day turning 65. And that's really, even though young people take cruises, okay, fine, honeymoons, whatever. But really, the cruise industry is very focused on that 65 to 80-year-old demographic in particular. These are people who presumably have money, who want to take vacations, but want easy vacations. You know, there are some people, this is really interesting, we've run across people who winter on cruise ships. So let's say they live in, South Dakota or someplace cold in the winter. They'll do like two or three back-to-back cruises. And rather than going to Florida or Arizona, renting a house or something, they'll literally do back-to-back cruises during the cold months where they live. And they'll go for the winter, their winter, on a cruise ship. And, you know, in South America, January is their summer. In Australia, New Zealand, January, I believe, is their summer. So they pick the places that are counter-cyclical, you know, from a weather perspective, and they literally winter on these cruise ships because they're getting all their meals, right? They don't have to get off the ship if they don't want to. They can do the excursions or not. You know, obviously they have maid service every day. You know, they have everything they could conceivably want on the boat. And so you do have some seniors. And so maybe they're spending, look, we have some friends, they took a cruise really cheap. The ones that are really cheap, by the way, are the ones that cross the Atlantic. So the cruise industry goes from the Mediterranean in the summer and fall, and then they have cruises that cross the Atlantic, because then for the winter, they do the Caribbean, typically, Caribbean. So sometimes if you just want a really relaxing 10 days, you catch one of those boats, and they're relatively cheap because there's like 5, 6, 7 days that they're out to sea. And there are people that just love, you know, they go from places in Europe, usually to Miami, and people just love sometimes just taking those cruises because they don't want to get off the ship. They just want the 5, 6, 7 days on the ship to just relax, have great meals, you know, redo all the activities on the boat, you know, have a great time. Now, the governor of Florida, DeSantis, who, by the way, is probably one of the best governors in the country, Ron DeSantis, if Trump doesn't run for president, has a sure bet, a sure opportunity to get the Republican nomination in 2024. The people in Florida love him. He's terrific. Anyway, he has announced that he's going to sue the federal government to reopen the cruise industry, because Florida has the cruise industry is huge in Florida. Many of the companies are based in Florida. Many of the ships dock in Miami and Fort Lauderdale and, you know, Tampa and, you know, all of the various ports that there are in Florida. And so it's critical to the Florida economy to get the cruise ship industry back in business again, because they're losing billions of dollars. And a lot of that revenue and income flows through Florida. And so DeSantis, who's all about jobs, 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 claims that, you know, the cruise ship industry can open safely. And I will tell you, folks, on the cruises that I've been on, constantly cleaning with disinfectant. They have hand sanitizer stands everywhere. Every time you walk into any store or anything else, you know, the hand sanitizer stand is there for you to, you know, do your hands, whatever. They know they have to be very careful. And this was happening before COVID. This was happening because of the norovirus that, you know, sometimes has gotten onto cruise ships. So my prediction is within a year, maybe sooner, that the cruise industry will be back. People are so, cooped up. They're dying to get out. They're dying to take vacations again. They're dying to do things with friends and family. They're sick and tired of all this lockdown. They're sick and tired of the destruction of our economy. They're sick and tired of the CDC changing the rules every other 5 minutes. You know, I really think if we had handled this properly, you know, 70% of the people who died of COVID were over 70 years old, and they had comorbidities. They had other chronic illnesses. Well, obviously, we needed to take care of those people. Those people surely should have been vaccinated first, and I think in most places they have been, although it was tough. I know I had a hard time setting up a vaccination for my cousin, who's 79 years old, because it all had to be done on the internet, and she's not internet savvy, so I had to do it for her. We waited weeks. We were very lucky, even months. We were very lucky in Reno, Nevada. Our doctor, our primary care physician, actually was able to get 300 doses of the vaccine, the Moderna vaccine. And so we didn't have to wait through the normal channels to get the vaccine. We were able to go through our normal doctor. We never came up. We were on 3 waiting lists. Finally, I think my wife did come up after we had an appointment with our doctor. But I don't think I ever came up. So I still wouldn't have had the shots, presumably. And I'm in the age group, presumably, that should have gotten the shots. But anyway, I think the cruise industry is going to come back. And I think, you know, you can still get some really good deals. Now, of course, this year is tough because, you know, things are still crazy. And until most people are vaccinated. Now, of course, here's the problem, folks. We can have everybody in the United States vaccinated that wants to be vaccinated. But then they'll create another hurdle. They'll say, well, you know, we need 3/4 of the world vaccinated before we can open up. You know, they keep moving the goalpost with all of this. And the CDC, this Anthony Fauci, has done more damage than anybody else in the United States. He's got to go. Well, we're out of time for this week, folks, but I hope you'll join me again next week for more CEO Business Mind.